Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with my producer, Jason DeFilippo. When I heard about Eric Ade, I didn't know what to make of this guy. He went to prison in Pakistan for 3 years for a crime he didn't commit, and he came out a murderer. But that wasn't all. I think what scared me most about Eric's story was that it could seemingly happen to any of us if we aren't careful, and even if we are. Eric's story is nothing short of incredible. He's a stuntman and an actor, and he ended up using his stuntman skill set to withstand torture in a Pakistani prison. While inside, he learned how to play Texas Hold'em poker and practiced every day with his prison mates, who turned out to be some infamous prisoners in their own right. Now that he's out, he plays poker professionally using some of the skills he learned inside. But this isn't just a poker story. This isn't just a detailed episode of Locked Up Abroad. This is a story about human resilience, mental and physical toughness, and protecting your mind even when the world seems stacked against you. I challenge you to listen to this episode and not put yourself firmly in Eric's shoes. This was one of my favorite interviews recently, and I hope you agree. We've split it into two parts because it was so long. I just didn't want to cut it short. And don't forget, if you want to learn how I book all these amazing guests and create these relationships, you've got to check out Level 1. That course is what I wish I had 10 years ago. It's all available at jordanharbinger.com/level1. Those are invaluable skills. Now, here's part one of Eric Ade. I will say, watching this documentary made me... This sounds weird, but I don't care. It made me want to be your best friend because I saw this and I went, this guy has integrity, he's tough, and he still has good humor, even though you ended up in like the worst situation that a lot of people could possibly imagine, other than maybe some sort of wartime thing. And even that, there are prisoners that get captured in war that get treated better than you got treated in prison in Pakistan. And I think it's because... after you watch this movie, you actually want to be more, people want to be more like you, I think. And I know that this is probably a little embarrassing. I don't care. But Jen and I were like, this guy is a person that you, most people would aspire to be like this in that situation. And most of us know damn well that we wouldn't. Does that make sense?
It does. And I've never heard it said that way before because I don't feel that way. But thank you. I appreciate hearing that.
You're welcome.
We are now best friends now. So look at
awesome.
That.
Awesome. That was easy. All right.
Yeah.
What were you doing before the prison stint? You know, what was going on? You were working as a stuntman. You were an actor.
I was recurring on 4 different TV shows. I had just finished working on the movie Scorpion King over the course of a year and a half. In that time, also, I just finished Planet of the Apes with Mark Wahlberg. And I had a pilot that I had booked called 360 that I was going to start. So I had a lot of great things going for me. My dreams of being an actor and a stuntman were paying off. I was a working actor stuntman. I was able to pay all my bills doing what I loved. And I had everything to lose and nothing to gain by being a drug smuggler. You know, it was just bad luck, bad timing, and just really messed up what Ray did to me.
Yeah, and we'll get into that story. But so you're working stuntman. What are you, like 21 at this point?
I was 21 years old, yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty fortunate because you think a lot of people, there's a lot of people in Hollywood that are 41 and they're waiting for that break. And you were working already.
I was in the rooms. I was in the same room as Ashton Kutcher for the role on that 70s show. It came down to me, Josh Hartnett, and this other guy. I was right there, and it was going to happen. Like I was screen testing against the guys who would go on to do great things. I was up for the role of Stifler. I was up for the role of
Sean William Scott.
Sean William Scott beat me out for Steve Stifler.
I could see you pulling a Stifler.
And I was so close to so many, you know, huge roles. So it wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when.
Right. One of them was going to hit because you were playing the right game.
Because back in the day, things have changed now. Like now it's like, all right, you submit yourself and they just cast off the tape. But back then you had to go to a lot of callbacks, like a ton of callbacks. And then they would narrow it down to like 5 or 6 of you, and then you would go and screen test. So I was always screen testing. Eventually, they stopped even having me audition. They just had me going straight to screen test, straight to the producers. I was always the top 5 or 6. I screen tested for Smallville, for not only Clark Kent, but also for Luther, for Rosenbaum's
character. That would have been a pretty cool role. For either one of those would have been pretty interesting.
But they were considering me for all these different possibilities. It was right timing. Everything was going for me, and I was just... the perfect age for everything that was happening. And all I did was go to the gym. So whenever they needed like a jock in any sense, I'd walk into the room and I would literally have casting directors go, finally, you know, you know, you know, life was great at that time for me, but I never even understood how great it was mm-hmm. until it was all taken away.
So how did this begin? You're at the gym and you meet this dude, Ray, who you're training. How does this devolve into you going to Pakistan?
When I was 19, I was working at this gym in Burbank called World Gym, and I was the nighttime manager, but I was also a personal trainer. I worked out with several clients. I would, you know, show them how to use the equipment properly. I would give them like exercise regimens. Really, all I would do is motivate them. You know, people just, they can't push themselves. So my whole job was simply to say, hey, we got some more, do it again. Come on, you can do this. Don't rest, time's over. Mm-hmm. Common sense stuff that you know, everyone knows, but they all still need a little nudge.
Yeah.
And I got to know Ray for about 9 months before I finally went on a job for him. Ray was a regular at the gym in Burbank. He was hiring a lot of young people, mostly late teens, early 20s, college kids, to travel around the world for him, importing expensive leather samples and paying them for it. And I ended up being one of the people that went on these trips. And I'd always been hesitant because, you know, it did sound too good to be true. It sounded, I asked the right questions. I'm like, well, what are you bringing back anything else? And he swore that all we were doing was beating the import tax. When you travel, they give you that little paper and they say, hey, do you have anything worth more than $400? No one ever says yes.
Right, of course.
You know? Sure. Even if you went on a tourist spending spree, you know, you're coming back with a couple $1,000, you're going to be like, I got $30 worth of goods. All right, cool.
Right.
No one wants to pay that.
And I think the limit's like 10 grand or something. Well, is that cash?
No, that's cash.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can't, if you, anything over $400, you got to pay, you know, import taxes on. Regardless.
I've traveled so much and I just always say no because I'm like, I'm not figuring this out.
Next time you're traveling, just, you know, try it. Say, oh, I bought $1,000 worth of goods and see how quick that bites you in the ass.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they're like, all right, cool. You owe us some money. You're like, what?
Man.
This sucks. And you won't say no. So he said by us going and beating the import tax, we would be saving him a ton of money. We get a free trip out of it. He pays us some spending money and we're doing him more of a favor than he's doing us.
Yeah.
But for me, the trips were the payment. Like, I would have done this for free just to be able to travel outside the country. At this time, I'd barely been out of the California.
Sure.
I'd never been out of the country. And to be presented an opportunity to travel and get paid for it. I mean, people want to travel, but not just to travel, but to travel for free and get paid for it.
It's a really good deal. And you're 21 at this point. I would have taken deal.
I was 19.
You were 19. I would have taken that deal anytime, probably up to about the last, I don't know, a handful of years, I would have taken a free trip to go do something and get paid for it.
And if it had just been me, then I sure as hell wouldn't have told all my friends, my family, my brothers, my mother. And people went on these trips because of my recommendation, because I was so sure that it was legit. And I wanted everyone to experience this. Like, hey, you want to travel around the world and get paid for it?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. And the thing that I'm so thankful for is that it was me that it happened to. Because I don't know how I would have felt had this had happened to somebody else because of my recommendation. I really don't.
And whether they would have made it through, because we'll get to what happened, but you were kind of, this isn't funny, but it's funny how it worked out. You were uniquely suited to what was going to happen because of your mental toughness, physical toughness. If this had happened to some random buddy that you'd met or your brother, I think even your brother in the documentary, he's like, I don't know how I would have handled it. That would have been even worse because you would have felt really guilty. And I don't think he would have come out in as good a shape.
I don't think I don't think my brother would have been able to handle it. But yeah, as sad as it sounds, if anyone was built for prison, it was me. And I mean, my life growing up was never peaches. I had a really bad childhood, and I don't really go and yell that out to the skies. That was my childhood. I thought the way I was raised was normal, but it wasn't. And I mean, I'm getting run over by a bus isn't normal.
Yeah, you got hit by a school bus.
I got run over by a school bus. So I've known nothing but pain my whole life. I was told I'd never walk again. I was told I'd never be able to play a sport, never be able to make love to a woman. I've proven the doctors wrong time and time again.
You've done all of those things multiple times, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of sports. That's a lot of walking.
I had my urethra severed and reconnected. I'm the first person on earth to have that done.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a weird badge.
I'm in doctor's history books. But it's all because I've just had an unusual life my whole life.
So you got hit by a bus, it crushed your pelvis, and that somehow severed a bunch of stuff down.
It destroyed me. It just ripped me apart. And I wasn't supposed to make it through the night, little less the week. And then as time went by, my odds started to increase. I was told never walk again. A couple years later, I'm walking.
And that gave you a high pain tolerance, right? What I remember you said something like, you just stopped complaining about the pain after a while?
Well, because all I was doing was waking people up. Like my mom's boyfriend at the time, this nice guy named Rod, he would come, I would get these sharp pains through my body that would just, it felt like glass is just going through me. And it turned out to be like the worst kidney pains because I was always in pain and things were always passing through me. And I would start screaming in the middle of the night. So my mom's boyfriend would come into the room and he was dead tired and all he could do is turn on the Nintendo and play Zelda next to me until it passed and I went back to sleep. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, it was weird because it was like a siren going off. And here I am, you know, 9 years old, 8 years old, and no one could do anything. And it got to the point that people started just ignoring me because they knew they couldn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
And I felt so, like, such a inconvenience on them that I started just screaming in silence.
When you say screaming in silence, is it just, you're just screaming in your head?
Yeah. Yeah.
And just kind of gritting your teeth and dealing with it?
To this day, I still go through those. And it has never stopped.
The pain hasn't stopped. So you just will wake up randomly feeling
all the
super
time.
Sharp pain.
All the time.
And nobody knows why, or they know why and they can't do anything.
They say that for some reason my kidneys contract and everything.
Huh.
And they always will. It just feels like someone's wringing it out like a towel.
Oh, God.
And it happens. It's not even when I'm sleeping. It's when I'm awake. They just start to come. And like my sides, I like literally do this. Because it just starts to get really bad. The cramps will just get terrible.
Wow.
But when I was a kid, I didn't know what was happening to me. I've gotten used to them. I've gotten used to them all the time. Now they're just an inconvenience, but I feel them all the time. Like what made me scream as a kid is just an inconvenience to me now.
So you're going back and forth from different countries, transporting these leather goods. What kind of countries are you going to? I
mean, it was the Turkey.
Turkey.
Originally, the trips were to Turkey, and Turkey's a great, beautiful country. And then on the way back, you could pick a country to go to. I'd always pick Sweden because I just like Sweden.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of good. I love Sweden, and I can imagine at age 21, Sweden's a pretty good stopover.
Remember, it was 19, 20, and then, yeah. So stopping over at Sweden was great. I mean, I stopped in Sweden during the winter, so it was always nighttime. But all the people are blonde, blue-eyed, and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And during the summer, it was really cool because the sun would stay up in the middle of the sky at 2 a.m. Yeah. So you're walking down the street, and it's completely deserted.
Sure.
And the sun's over your head. Like, I don't know why anyone would want to film a zombie movie in America when they could save so much money by going over to Sweden or another Scandinavian country during the summer and just film there when everyone is just asleep.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Just a ghost town in the middle of the day. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Maybe it's the exchange rate. I don't know. Yeah. So you're 19 and 20, man. It's funny because a lot of people must say, dude, you must have known.
I get asked that. People are pretty harsh when it comes to others. Like if I knew someone did something bad happened to someone, I want to go up to a rape victim and ask them, hey, did you really get raped?
Or what were you wearing?
You know, yeah. I would never do that. But I had a woman come up to me and say, were you someone's bitch in prison?
That's terrible.
I'm thinking to myself, man, I wish you were a man for a second. You know, just for a second. I mean, no man's had the balls to say that shit. But I would be like, let's humor you. Let's say I was. Do you really want to hear about it?
Mm.
Why would you ask such a terrible question?
Yeah, that's just mean.
Or people will say, oh, I heard all the bad stuff that happened to you. Did that really happen to you? Okay, now you're calling me a liar to my face. You don't even understand that.
Mm.
People don't think before they talk sometimes.
Are these people that just saw you on Locked Up Abroad, or are these like friends of yours? Okay.
No, these are definitely not my friends.
Yeah.
These are definitely not my friends.
Huh.
Like there were interviews being done when I was overseas by people who knew me. Everyone, you know, there was this girl I knew and she did an interview and she goes, well, yeah, I think he did it. That was her words. I think he did it because every time we were at parties, he was always drunk. And I was like, this girl is a fucking liar because I don't drink.
Wow.
I don't drink at all. I don't do drugs. My drug of choice was the gym. That's all I did was work out. I didn't drink. I didn't do drugs. And here's this girl doing an interview saying, I think he did it. And he was always drunk. Well, fuck you.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Like, I'm already in a bad situation. So why are you going and pouring lighter fluid on a spark over here? That's ridiculous.
That's unbelievable.
And other people would do that too. People would be like, oh yeah, Eric was talking about this all the time. Like, who the fuck are you? I don't even know who you are.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
You know, out of the woodwork come people who don't know the situation, but they want to get their own, I guess, their own reasons to feel special.
15 minutes of fame.
If so, like if I don't know anything about a person, I'm not going to go and start making up shit just to be noticed.
Sure.
People do that though.
So you're going back and forth from Turkey, hanging out in Europe. This is an awesome job. You're telling all your friends and family about it. Were some people like, hey, dude, you should be careful because it sounds really good. And I don't know, I don't want anything to happen to you. So just do your diligence.
No.
Nobody said that?
Before I went, I asked my mom, like I told everyone about this. And my mom put me in touch with her FBI friend who wanted to hear the scenario. And I told him, okay, importing expensive leather goods, beating the import tax, free trip. He says, this kind of thing happens all the time. People bring back rugs, people bring back jewelry. And if you get caught, it's a minor offense, maybe like a slap on the wrist. I said, is there any jail time? He goes, nah, there's no jail time. It's more a moral crime, if anything. Worst case scenario, they'll confiscate it and give you a fine, but that's it. So when he told me there's no jail time, that cleared any kind of doubt or concern that I might have had. But everyone that I had told this job to, no one not once said, Eric, careful, it could be this. No, everyone wanted in. Everyone wanted to do it. Everyone was asking me to meet with Ray. What I do nowadays when people tell me about their scenarios, I say, hey, you're drug smuggling. Simple as that. It's a red flag. Mm-hmm. Better safe than sorry. Why take the chance? Learn from me. Trust me. From me. At least that way it wasn't all for nothing. But people want to believe that I was guilty. They want to believe that I deserved to have this happen to me so that they can swallow their own negativities in their life easier. Because people love to complain. I don't know if you know, especially in 2018, everyone's so positive.
Yeah, yeah.
No one ever complains about the littlest damn things that go on in our lives. Oh, you know, I don't have a job or I can't do this because, you know, it's just life's too hard for me. No, you're just looking for a pity party. You're looking for, you know, people love to have people feel sorry for them.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Eric Audet. We'll be right back after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by HostGator. Do you have a business card? If you do, it probably lists your website. If you don't, it's probably because your website is like your virtual business card. Either way, you have to have a website. It's 2019. There's no excuse for you not having one. It should look clean, load easily, and hardly ever go down. So if you want to have your home on the internet, let our friends at HostGator handle your website needs. It's never been easier, and the best thing is you can start today. You don't need to hire a professional developer just because your site needs a few bells and whistles. HostGator has plenty of add-ons that'll pump your site full of professional-looking features. And that's why we recommend HostGator's Website Builder. HostGator allows you to choose from over 100 beautiful templates. That way your site's going to look great, and it will look great on any device, like a smartphone, a tablet, and a desktop. Add-on options are plentiful, so bells and whistles can be yours. You'll be able to have unlimited email addresses, increase your search engine visibility without signing up for expensive SEO webinars, or get started with WordPress with just one click. And if that sounds more advanced than you'd like, then just start with the basics on HostGator's easy-to-use control panel. They've also got 99.9% uptime, and their support team is there to help with any issues 24/7, 365. Of course, they're also giving us a great deal, up to 62% off all packages for new users, and they offer a 45-day complete money-back guarantee. Go to HostGator.com/Jordan right now to sign up. That's HostGator.com/Jordan. This episode is sponsored in part by Athletic Greens. I love Athletic Greens. My friend runs the company. I've been using it for years. It's really a great way. I'm on the road right now. I'm in London. It's hard to get fresh veggies all the time in winter in every major city that I'm going to. I'm on airplanes a bunch. So I'll bring Athletic Greens, dump it in some water, whatever, and just down it. And then I don't have to worry about it. I'm not going to end up with some crazy scurvy or something like that from a lack of vitamins. And you've heard guys like Tim Ferriss, Peter Diamandis, they're all into this stuff as well. It's a really good all-in-one whole food supplement. It's also one of the most complete whole food supplements developed over 10 years by doctors, nutritionists, naturopaths, 75 whole food sourced ingredients, energy, immunity, digestion, guy health stuff in there. There's adaptogens, antioxidants to help you manage stress, mood, healthy aging. I need all that. It's also got the antioxidant equivalent of 12 servings of fruits and vegetables. You know you're not getting that on a freaking airplane. Jason, tell them where to get it.
Well, Jordan, we have a special deal for our listeners. Athletic Greens is giving 20 free travel packs valued at $79 with your first purchase. Getting into a daily routine with Athletic Greens really will be the single best thing you can do for your health and success this year. We can't stress this enough. So jump on over to athleticgreens.com/Jordan and claim your special offer today. That's athleticgreens.com/Jordan. Don't miss out on this one. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. To learn more about our sponsors and get links to all the great discounts you just heard, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. If you'd like some tips on how to subscribe to the show, just go to jordanharbinger.com/subscribe. Now back to the show with Eric Audet.
I think the other reason people wanted to believe that you're guilty is it's too damn scary to think that an innocent person like you could go to prison in Pakistan for 3 years and go through that crap for having done nothing. I think because I even wanted to be like, please tell me he really did that and this is not a big clusterfuck of a disaster, because it's clearly just unfair.
It's easier for them to swallow what happened to me if they think that I deserved it.
Yeah.
Rather than knowing that I didn't deserve it and that I went through all those things.
Exactly.
And it helps them, you know, complain about their own little everyday lives. Because everyone loves, like I said, everyone loves to complain. No one is grateful for the things they have until it's all taken away from them. And that's why I appreciate my life so much more, is because I've had everything taken away from me. It's because I've had so many bad things happen to me in my life. I mean, to me, Pakistan was just one of the many bad things that have happened to me in my life. I've had so many things happen and I just learned to get over it. You know, you get knocked down 6 times, you get up 7. And that's the only way I've ever known how to live. Pakistan was just one of many things, that bad things that happened to me. Last year, someone decided to online bully me, and because of a joke I put on my page, you know, my dream since I was a kid was to be a stuntman. And I was accomplishing that dream. I was hosting these stunt parties at one of my restaurants in Woodland Hills. And I put a joke on my page that I wish I didn't put, but, you know, I've always been a sarcastic guy. I'd gone to this audition. A friend of mine who was producing, but he introduced me to a producer and writer for this low-budget movie where they were looking for people who have PTSD. Now, I absolutely qualify for that.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
I have night terrors. I sleepwalk. I hurt myself in my sleep. And it's like sometimes going to sleep is like Russian roulette. I've woken up with black eyes.
From hitting yourself somehow?
Yeah. I've woken up with smashed fingers with discs out of my neck. And I've destroyed, you know, whatever room I've been in. When I travel, it happens a lot. I've destroyed hotel rooms. So, yes, I suffer from PTSD. Nothing I go around screaming to the skies. So I got brought in for this interview. And they asked me, what branch of service did you serve in to get PTSD? Oh. And I said, I never served. I mean, I tried to serve, but after 9/11, I tried to serve, but I sleepwalk. I've always sleptwalk. So they don't want you around, you know, weapons and explosives when you sleepwalk. But I did try to serve. My dad served, my stepdad, my brothers, my uncles. And these guys, you know, have told me some of the greatest stories, and I respect them 100%. Well, they said, we're looking for someone who served. So I was irked about it. I understood, but I posted on my page, sucks to be told you can't play a role you've played countless times before because you never served in the military. When they say they're only looking for the real thing, what does that say about me? I've been cast as a rapist 7 times. The wonderful world of Hollywood, right? Well, obviously, I'm making fun of the situation.
Sure,
I'm not a rapist, but yet I've played it countless times. I always play a douchebag or a bad guy or a thug.
Okay.
Well, this woman who is very prominent in the stunt industry went out of her way to post on her page, because she only cast real vets. That's her thing. That's cool, but she's not the only one that does that. Other people cast cops, real medics, real doctors. You know, but people cast the real thing all the time. She's not the only one. But the stunt industry is so small, and they love to just try to kiss each other's ass and go out of the way to badmouth people. And in order to look good in her eyes, someone brought her this post that was had nothing to do with her, but basically saying, look at Eric saying. So she posts on her page, if you got a problem with vets, don't ever submit to me again. I've never submitted to that woman, ever. And then within 2 days, her post had 600 likes, re-likes, re-shares, and everything. I was getting death threats.
That's ridiculous.
Again, we had vets come to our house with guns. I had to go to the cops a couple times. And I'm like, wow, after all the shit I've been through, this person's going to go over there and destroy my dream because of a joke on my page that had nothing to do with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, I got blackballed from the stunt industry over a joke on my page. And my family's all vets. And she turned it into that I hate vets, twisted it around so bad. Everyone in the stunt industry has quietly come to me and told me, you should sue that woman. You should do this. This is the worst thing that's ever happened. I'm like, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened to me. It's just someone who's very small stepping on an ant and trying to ruin me and kill a dream. And that's what people do. I was run over by a bus. I got through that. I was wrongly imprisoned in Pakistan. I got through that. I had someone kill my dream over here. I'll get through that.
how did you end up going to Pakistan? Because we, all right, you're going back and forth from Turkey. You're going through Sweden, hanging out. It's great. And then .. Pakistan. I mean, what, this is the part that's a little confusing for people, because they're like, yeah, okay, Turkey, maybe. But when you say, hey, you're going to Pakistan, that's where I would have drawn the line. That's what everyone's thinking when they see this flick, right?
Before I went to Turkey, I had a lot of questions. I didn't just want to go to Turkey, because before I knew anything about Turkey, all I knew was that it was a Muslim country. Mm-hmm. I mean, back then, yeah, I thought, you know, Muslims were dangerous people because, you know, you only see what you see on the news. But Turkey was a beautiful country. Turkey was an awesome country, and I met so many friendly, wonderful people there. I had a great time in Turkey. Ray was able to use my experience in Turkey on how amazing it was and how everything I thought was going to happen didn't happen. I had a great time. Like, any kind of worries I had, he was able to use that against me and justify, well, that's also going to be Pakistan. He painted Pakistan like a Turkey. Pakistan was supposed to be my brother's trip. Mm-hmm. And when he found out it was to Pakistan, he says, I'm not going. And he backed out. And when he told me that it was to Pakistan, it made no sense to me, because this was the first I was hearing about it. 10 days before Peter was supposed to go on the trip, he tells me that it's to Pakistan. It's not to Turkey. So I ask Ray, what's Peter talking about? Mm-hmm. Why is it what's this Pakistan thing? First, I'm hearing about it. He lets me know, because of the war in Afghanistan, he's getting a great deal on leather goods in Pakistan. My exact words were, good, you can FedEx it back then.
Yeah, yeah.
You're getting such a great deal, then just FedEx it back.
Yeah.
And he goes, Eric, before you went to Turkey, you were worried, right? And I was worried about, like, dangers, like sure, you know, people hurting me. That's what I was worried about. But no one was bad. Everyone was kind. And he used that as justification of how great Pakistan is going to be. So this is just the first trip to see how things go. If it's not good, then we'll just do it to Turkey. And he made me feel guilty because I had vouched for my brother, and right, I don't want to leave him hanging. He was my friend. Mm-hmm. Ray was my friend. And whenever I say something's going to happen, it's going to happen. I always stick true to my word. I always have. A man's value is only as good as his word. And I think everyone, like, when it comes to bets, you know, I pay all my bets. If I lose a bet, I always pay it. If I say I'm going to do something, I always do. If I say I'm going to show up somewhere, I'm going to do everything I can to show up, you know? So I told Ray, I felt obligated because Peter, I vouched for him and Peter was backing out. Even though it wasn't to Pakistan, I still felt obligated to make this happen for my friends. I don't want to leave them hanging, but also I didn't want to lose this opportunity. Even though I was working all the time as an actor, I know, you know, the highs and the lows come. You work all the time. It's feast or famine. So I don't want to lose this opportunity.
Yeah. Plus he's your friend. You're just like, look, I can take a trip. It's going to be a pain because the middle of something.
I didn't have any time. I really didn't. And even after I said I'll go, I had booked a guest star on the show Arliss. And I would have made more money working on Arliss.
Sure.
Than I would have on the damn trip. But I had given him my word that I'd go. So not only was I losing money, I would lose 3 years of my life for a crime I didn't know I was being used to commit.
Unbelievable. All right, so you go to Pakistan, and then what is that like? You just land and you're like, hey, let me get a suitcase full of leather goods? I mean, what do you do?
No, it doesn't work that way. Okay. Ray's contacts picked me up from the airport. Now, Pakistan is not a friendly country at all.
The people in it, you mean?
Yeah. The second they see me land, I stick out like a sore thumb. I'm one of the taller guys there, the only white guy there. Usually when you go to other countries, you see all kinds of foreigners, you know, Asians, Hispanics, you know, black people, white people. You see different
diversity.
Yes. There's no diversity in Pakistan. There's none. I'm the only white guy there. And that's the one thing I'm noticing is there's no diversity. Everyone's wearing their chemise, which are like dresses. Everything's really dirty. There's people everywhere. There's no sense of privacy there. People who don't know you, like if we were having a conversation, just some random guys would walk up, stand right there between us, and just start looking at both of us like they were part of the conversation the whole time.
That's so weird.
It is very weird. And it happened all the time.
I could not handle that.
It would happen all the time. Like I'll skip ahead. I'll be in chains talking to my damn lawyer or to the consular, and these people just walk up with their hands behind their back, you know, and just look at both of us. And I'll be like, seriously, man, fuck off. or all these homeless people, as I'm being led through the throngs of the crowd on the chains, would be like grabbing at my pants to like ask for money. I'm like, oh, fuck, do I have money?
I'm handcuffed.
I'm in chains. I got no money for you guys. The shit that would happen in Pakistan would make me laugh. So, even there, I was laughing. I was like, this is so fucking ridiculous. It's great.
This is so unbelievable. See, you're like, and then they're picking you up from the airport. What, do they take you to like some hotel?
They take me to a hotel off of Murray Road, and they tell me, they go, Ray fucked up. That's the first thing he says. Ray fucked up. You're supposed to go to Karachi. I go, okay, what does that mean? Karachi is an 8-hour drive, by the way.
You're in Islamabad?
Well, I'm in Islamabad.
All right.
And I said, so what does that mean? I said, well, we got to go to Karachi and bring back the stuff. I go, so am I coming with you guys? I'm assuming I'm coming with you guys, because that was sort of the selling pitch on Ray, is that, oh, these guys are going to show you around. They're going to show you a good time. You're not just going to be left hanging by yourself. You're going to, you know, have people there showing you how great Pakistan is. And they said, nah, we're going to leave you at the hotel and then we'll come back. I go, when are you coming back? They asked me, when is your flight? Like, they didn't say they're going to come back. They just asked, oh, when's your flight? I said, Friday. They go, we'll come back Friday. No, okay. Well, that's
now. What?
I get there on a Monday.
Yeah.
And I'm being told these guys are going to be just leaving me at the hotel till Friday. And their exact words were, don't leave the hotel. I'm like, that's not an option.
No way.
No, no, no. Also, Ray said they would give me spending money, right? So they gave me $1,000. When I told them this, they started laughing. So Ray says, you guys are giving me spending money, which is true. Ray says,
sure.
Because I didn't have any, I didn't, you know, I didn't really know how things worked. So nowadays I bring the currency, or I know how to exchange and that kind of stuff. But when I'm there, I'm just sort of like at the, I don't know, at the mercy of everyone around me, because I'm trying to figure things out as they come.
Yeah.
So they gave me 1,000 rupees, told me it's like 200 American dollars. I learned very quickly after my first breakfast that shit was 17 bucks.
Oh, man.
Because like after my first breakfast, I remember my first breakfast being 360 rupees. That's a third of my funds. I'm like, holy shit. And these are just a couple eggs, you know, eggs and jam toast and some chai.
Oh, man.
I'm like, this sucks. And that's day one. That's day one. So I'm like, this sucks. So I want to go and explore the city. And the city is like just throngs and throngs and throngs of people. It's not like, hey, there's a person. No, it's
kind of interesting to do something like that for me.
Theoretically. Trust me, I wasn't bored. Watching all the traffic and everything, but no matter where I went, there was not one smile, not one friendly face. Everyone was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
And I'm jogging through the streets of Islamabad. You know,
because, you went jogging?
Yeah, I went jogging. That was one thing I like to do is run. I went jogging and I see these three girls who, you know, were somewhat attractive, you know, younger my age. And they had the burqas on, but their faces were showing. And I see them, so smiles, and I go across the bridge, and halfway across the bridge over the traffic and the throngs of people, I look back and the girls are waving. I'm waving at these girls too. I'm like, all right. There's a flag planted right there. And I find an internet cafe far down the way. Well, on the internet cafe, you know, I send out a group email where I'm at and what's going on and in my own sense of humor and my smart assness. And well, on the way back, those three girls are still there. So I go over and I start trying to chat with these three girls. There's no chance of us communicating other than a smile. They're smiling and they're like looking, blushing and looking at each other. And no one speaks a lick of English. This little guy comes out of one of the shops and just starts yelling at me. And I'm talking, this guy looks like he's a buck 10. Little skinny guy. Like right. He needs to eat.
How much did you weigh?
I was 225. I was benching 420 pounds.
So you're like more than twice his weight.
I was maxing out at 420. And I was repping 405, you know.
That's ridiculous.
Just a ridiculous big guy. And
you could have picked him up with one hand and thrown him.
I didn't even have to pick him up. I could have just like, you know, hey,
yeah,
knock it off, you know. But obviously, I wasn't welcome here.
Right.
As I was walking away. Like, I'm walking away. This guy just kept shoving me down the road. Like, all right, he could have stopped 10 yards ago.
Right.
Finally, I turned around and grabbed him by his wrist. And all I did was bend his wrist. And this guy screams and goes down the crowd. But instead of like people just minding their own business, the crowd swarms me. The whole crowd gets around me. Now, when I pushed this guy, when I bent this guy's wrist back, I dropped my bag, my backpack that I had. And when I looked down to grab my bag, because I saw the crowd was starting to get antsy around me and I needed to get out of there, I looked down, my bag's gone. And the only one that could have jacked my bag was this woman who wasn't making eye contact with me. And I'm thinking to myself, she's got my bag under her dress. But I'm not about to go shake down an old lady in front of people. Because that would look even worse.
Yeah, no way.
So my first day in Pakistan, I got not the right amount of money. I got put in a hotel, told that I shouldn't leave the hotel. Nothing was going according to plan. And I got robbed by a little old lady. That was day one. I'm like, this place sucks.
Not a good start to the trip.
No, it wasn't. But I met this girl on the plane from Dubai to Pakistan. And it's only a couple hour flight. But I never had a problem with meeting women and talking to girls. And she had a British accent. Even though she was Pakistani, she had a British accent. Mm-hmm. She spoke English great. Sweet girl, very beautiful. And we flirted with each other on the plane. And when before we landed, I gave her my email. Well, she had emailed me, and I saw her at the when I got to the internet cafe. That was one of the emails that I saw. So I told her which hotel I was at, what room number I'm at. The time I get back to the hotel, she's already called. There's a message waiting for me at the hotel.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right,
game is tight.
Trips start, man. My game's never been terrible.
That makes one of us.
A friendly, confidence and a friendly smile, and, you know, people like different, you know?
Yeah.
People like a guy who doesn't mind making a fool of themselves, and I was great at making myself look like an idiot.
All right.
So I get to the hotel, and she calls me, and she goes, hey, we should hang out tonight. And I'm like, all right, let's hang out tonight. So she gives the concierge all the information on how to get to her, and he tells a cab driver how to get where she lives. Now, I go on one of the longest cab rides I've ever been on, and we're going like down dirt paths and everything, and I'm like, this guy's taking me to abduct me and steal my kidneys.
Definitely. Yeah.
I'm already got an escape plan. I'm like, if this guy's gonna be a dipshit and try, like, if someone's gonna try to pull me out of the car, I'm throwing this guy out of the car and jacking his car.
Sure.
I'm already thinking like, I will go after him first and carjack him.
Yeah, remember how to drive a stick and everything.
Well, we started off the sun was still in the sky when I left, and by the time I finally got to our destination, it was pitch black dark. We go to this neighborhood, and first thing I notice is there's glass on all the walls between the houses. There's barbed wire fence, and like, this is
like broken glass.
Yes.
Oh, so big, like a spikes.
Yes. Like, they don't just put like walls in between houses. It would literally be like if all the fences around your house had just broken glass cemented into the top so that people don't climb over and everything. And a lot of the houses had guard shacks in front of them with guards, armed guards in front of them, like one armed guard. Well, I get brought up to this house that all these little kids are outside on the driveway. And I'm talking like the whole neighborhood came together to come be here. And this one girl comes out, talks to the cab driver, tells me to give him 100 rupees. Cab driver loses his mind. He's yelling, but I did what she told me to. 100 rupees is still, I don't have a lot of rupees. I started with 1,000.
Yeah.
I already paid 360 for breakfast. Now I'm paying my 100. So I'm already losing half my bankroll in my first day in Pakistan.
But that's what it was supposed to cost. She knew that already.
Well, no, I didn't know that.
No, but she knew it.
She knew. She was like, if the guy was asking for a lot more, he was probably asking for a lot more, but he's pissed off because I'm a foreigner, and foreigners always have money. I didn't have any money.
Yeah, he wanted 10 times the fare.
Probably way more, actually.
Yeah.
So I follow her into the house, and she tells me that she told her brothers that I was an actor, and I told her at the time I'd done the movie, done a few movies, and she told, you know, people, the whole, it spread through the neighborhood. So I met all the little kids out front and whatnot, and talked to them, and a couple of them spoke English, but then we went into her house, which is a huge compound, like just a big house. And she says, now she's telling me she messed up. I'm like, what happened? She goes, I told my brothers about you. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, now they want to hang out with you. I'm like, okay, cool. So we're all going to hang out? She's like, no, you're going to hang out with them. I'm like, I didn't come here to hang out with your brothers. I came here to hang out with you.
Oh, right. They don't want her hanging out with you.
Oh, God, no.
Oh,
no,
no, man. No.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Eric Audet. We'll be right back after this.
This episode is also sponsored by Capterra. Remember 1999? So we're officially 20 years past that. So if you're no longer partying like it's 1999, why does the software you use every day at work feel like it's not quite ready for Y2K? Start the year off on the right foot. Find software that's a little more up-to-date at Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. They've got over 700,000 reviews of products. That is a ton. From real software users, you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. They've got over 700 specific categories of software. I didn't even realize there were that many. Everything from project management to email marketing, yoga studio management software that's actually a thing. So no matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Join the millions of people who use Capterra every month to find the right tools for their business. Whenever we need new software, Jen's always stopping by Capterra to find out what the reviews are. It's kind of like, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention this. Imagine a website that has reviews for other things like restaurants. It's that for software. Visit Capterra.com/Jordan for free today to find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/Jordan. Capterra.com/Jordan.
Thanks for listening and supporting the show. Your support of our advertisers is what keeps us on the air. To learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. And the worksheet for Eric Audet will not be released until part two airs on Thursday. That link will be in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. Now for the conclusion of part one with Eric Audet.
So nothing is going according to plan. I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't want to come hang out with your brothers.
Yeah.
Now the brothers, they seem nice. They were aged. They ranged in age from 24 to 14. And all the older guys had like beards going, like long, long beards, but they all had British accents and they all come in. There's four of them. And she made me a burger, actually, which is good. She made me a burger and gave me some soda. And that was, you know, actually the
best meal you had in Pakistan
at that time.
Yeah.
And then her brothers go, okay, we're going to go now. And I'm like, can I just hang here with you? And she's like, nope, sorry. Now it's out of her hands. And I didn't understand the customs and the culture there. Like I didn't understand, you know, at the time I didn't know that, like her even just leaving the house at night to tell the cab, how much it was and have me pay the cab to get me was a huge risk on her part because women aren't allowed to leave the house after dark in Pakistan. They're not allowed to socialize with men that they're not married to in Pakistan. Like, you know, people could start talking and the way rumors spread could literally cost a woman her life in Pakistan. Yeah. I didn't know that at the time, but she was like really taking a risk, even just socializing with someone like me. So I'm glad that I hung out with just her brothers now, knowing what I know now. And her brother's idea of showing me a good time was driving around to all the locations. They'd be like, hey, there's Pizza Hut. Hey, there's KFC.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, all right. I came all the way around the planet to see
some
fast
franchises.
Food.
Yeah,
exactly.
Jeez.
But one thing I noticed was that all the lines I saw was guys. And my exact words were like, man, it's a fucking cock fest out
here.
Yeah,
sure.
And they're like, oh, yeah, we're looking for a woman. And I was like, all right, yeah, that'd be cool. Let's go where the ladies are. No, their idea of looking for a woman for me was they wanted to find a woman that was out after dark so that we could gang rape her.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Their idea of showing me a good time was so that we can go find a woman unchaperoned and gang rape her because that's their right in Pakistan. I thought they were kidding. And at the time, but as you know, obviously time went by, no, that's the way it is. If a woman is seen outside past curfew, unchaperoned, especially even if she's chaperoned, but if she's unchaperoned during the day in some of these areas, it's the man's right to gang rape them. But if it's after hours, no, it's every man's right to gang rape them.
This is insane.
It's nuts. And people don't understand how good they have it here because this is the crap that's happening over in other countries. And the media doesn't want to report on it because it's, you know, people will, I don't know why they don't want to shine a light on what's really happening. Like, oh, okay, well, you know, that's just some of them. No, it's not. It's not some of them. That's the way their customs are. There's honor killings all the time. There's gang rapes. I've got hundreds of stories from what I heard, what would go on in Pakistan. I'll jump ahead a little bit. There was a British man who was born in Pakistan, but he grew up in Britain and he raised his family in Britain. He brought back his family, two of his daughters. One was a 25 year old doctor. The other one was a 20-year-old. And he brought them back under the guise of, oh, we're going to go see family. It's a vacation. What he didn't tell them was that he had arranged marriages for them. And the reason was because he hated the way they were born in the, with a Western mentality. Well, the 25-year-old doctor, she has a Western mentality. She's like, you know, fuck you, Dad. That's not happening.
Yeah, I'm a doctor.
Getting married. Well, he said this brought dishonor to his family. So he shot his daughter in the face, killing her.
Oh, my God.
For 2 weeks, this man complained in prison that I shouldn't be in jail because the victim's family members have forgiven me. And under Muslim law, if the victim's family members forgive you, then Allah forgives you and all is forgotten. Who are the victim's family members? His wife, sons. So he spent 2 weeks in prison complaining about being in jail for the murder of his own daughter. He was released. Charges were all dropped. His other daughter was sold. She's still, I'm sure to this day, she's still in Pakistan.
This is insane.
And this is normal. And that was some guy who grew up in Europe. People go, oh, no, that's not how it is. No, that's how it is. I saw it countless times. There was a man, there was a kid. He was my age, actually. He was 21 when he got arrested, and he had an American accent. He grew up in Detroit.
That's where I'm from.
Oh, you might know him then. He grew up in Detroit, and him and his cousin raped and murdered a girl in Detroit. Well, he fled back to Karachi to avoid prison in Pakistan, sure. But he was arrested in Karachi transported to Islamabad, getting ready for extradition back to the U.S. And this guy liked the Lions. He grew up in America, spoke with American accent. And I said to him, why would you do this? And his exact words to me are like, it's just the way things are, man. This is how we're raised.
That's crazy.
I was like, wow. And he just like, he didn't think it was, he thinks it's in Pakistan because it's no big deal. But he grew up in America though, but he still grew up with that mentality.
That's crazy. How is it? I feel like that's such a bullshit excuse to be like, oh, well, you know, I was raised this way. If you're such a Detroiter that you actually are one of the ones that like the Lions, you should have figured out by now that you can't rape people and murder people.
In Pakistan, it's just a different mentality. There was two things we couldn't talk about. We couldn't talk about politics and women. You couldn't talk about that. And the reason is because we completely didn't agree on anything. Obviously, everyone, you know, at the time hated Bush. They hated Americans' policies and why America helps Israel. You know, that's usually what it always rotated around is, why is America always back in Israel? But then when it came to women, one of the questions that stood out to me, someone says, in America, can a woman ask a man out on a date? It's like, yeah, really? And you guys are okay with this? Yeah, actually, I'm flattered when a woman asks me out on a date. It's good for my ego. They go, and so if a woman comes begging and crawling like a dog, I'm like, I don't really see it that way.
Yeah, that doesn't really happen.
But that's how it was being described. And so that wouldn't be isolated incidences. Many, many people would ask me, you know, they would say, are women not property in America? And I'm like, no, they're not only are we equal, but actually the men are usually the ones who, you know, need to, you know, mind their P's and Q's mm-hmm. around the woman to keep her happy. But in Pakistan, they're considered property. They don't have any rights whatsoever. So that first day in Pakistan, this woman who I met on the plane, who was studying abroad and who, you know, had a British accent, and her brothers all studied abroad and had British accents, were trying to show me a good time to find a woman that we could all gang rape.
Unbelievable.
Needless to say, we didn't find a woman.
Yeah, lucky.
But had we found one, that wouldn't happen. Not with me there.
No.
Whatever I drank that day, though, made me sick. I drank water from a pitcher at this restaurant, and I'm thinking that's where I got sick from.
Sure, yeah.
The next 2 days, I was sick as a dog. I was shitting sideways. I didn't even wear pants the entire day on Wednesday because it was pointless.
I don't mean to laugh, but I can imagine how sick you are. It was like no point in wearing pants.
No point in wearing pants. I lost so much weight. I was dehydrated. I remember I couldn't eat anything on Tuesday. I ordered some room service and I was drinking only like 7-Up bottles. That's what they kept bringing up to the room. I was doing nothing. That wasn't going to take a chance on anything water-wise. Thursday, I started to feel better and I went out. You know, I just needed to get out. It was a little cabin fever being in the room. I felt a lot better and I got food. Everything I bought was packaged though. I was buying, you know, packaging. I found a store where they weren't charging me a ridiculous amount. Like it was like 2 rupees for like these little Hostess things. And I bought bottled water and everything else. I go back to the internet cafe and it's Valentine's Day. It's February 14th. And one of the emails that I got was from this a girl named Missy. Missy, I had been in love with since I was 5. Missy was the reason why I had studied longer, why I'd worked out harder. She was everything motivation wise for me to do better in my life, to be better in my life. She was my driving force since I was a kid. And for some reason, I fell in love with this girl when I was only 5 years old and it never went away. Missy and I, we would date on and off, but her mother absolutely hated me. Her mother hated me. Her mother was a teacher's aide. And in second grade, even as a kid, I was always in trouble. My name was just etched into the board. It was always on the chalkboard because I was always telling jokes and, you know, being disruptive and being a little dipshit. And I was always trying to get laughs from everyone. Well, her mom sunk these nails into my shoulder.
Her fingernails?
Yeah. Her mom was an evil woman, just an evil woman. And she sunk her nails into my shoulder and I was in a lot of pain. So I squirted her with glue. And this is in second grade.
Oh, wow.
So I squirted her with glue and she was in shock. And I grabbed her sweater and threw it in a mud puddle. Well, she never let that go. She never let that go. She never forgave me. And she made sure that her daughter wasn't allowed to date me. So Missy and I would have to date like in secret. And
sure.
And then her mom would find out and I guess take it out on Missy. And then we'd have to distance ourselves again. And this went on forever. And now I'm 21 years old. I'm in Pakistan. And I'm getting an email from Missy saying that it was a group email. It wasn't to me, but it was to everyone. And I was one of the everyone's that her mom had died from pancreatic cancer.
Oh, man.
And, you know, my first initial reaction was, fuck yeah.
Oh, man, that's terrible.
You know, it's awful.
That's terrible.
But I was like, yes, you know, because I can This is
finally
this,
free.
This is the woman that's been keeping me from this girl that I've loved since I was 5 years old. 5 years old. And so I'm like, burn in hell, bitch, you know, because
oh man,
I was a fucking ass. I mean, this is my first reaction. And then I get on the internet and go, Missy, I'm so sorry, sweetie. I'm sorry you're going through this. I love you. I get back next week. I will be there for you. Anything you need. Don't worry. I'm really sorry this happened. But then I'm like, fist pump. Yes.
Yeah.
You
know, because
this one woman was the reason I couldn't be with this girl.
That's so
that's
so 20 something.
That's February 14th. And that's 16 years. It was technically 17 years after I've known this girl. I've been in love with this girl for 17 years. And finally, the one woman, the main reason why we haven't been able to be together and make a go at it
is out of the way.
Is out of the way. And what happens the very next day? I get arrested. I'm sorry, but God's got a fucked up sense of humor, man.
That's crazy.
This dude, it's always, I mean, I was not meant to be with that girl for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, I was looking at it for that one reason. Like, all right, what happened in Pakistan sucks. You know, what happened to me? But what happened, what I lost at the time?
Yeah.
It wasn't getting arrested for a crime I didn't commit. That was the worst part. It was losing her. To me, that was the worst part. Losing the opportunity to be with this woman that I want to be with my entire life. That was the worst part about it. And I go to get arrested the next day for unknowingly smuggling opium.
So the opium is sewn into the lining of the bag.
Yeah.
Of the suitcase that you're carrying jackets in.
Yeah. It's the jackets was a smoke screen. If I had taken all the jackets out of the suitcase and put it in my own suitcase, I probably would have, you know, red flags would have been raised by how angry they were. Why would you guys be getting so angry? I'm just going to go in my own suitcase. You know, if I'm here for the leather jackets, then there should be no problem.
Right. Yeah.
But, it was professionally sewn into the suitcase. If I had emptied the suitcase looks like an empty suitcase. People are like, how could you not tell from the weight? I mean, it wasn't ridiculously heavy.
A kilo of opium is still a kilo.
Well, it was still 3.6. So that's 7.2 pounds.
So, but that's not ridiculous.
No,
for a
it's
bag.
Not. It's yeah. not. It's not. And, you know, it was so professionally concealed. There's no way to like feel it and know it without knowing it, being in on it. There's no way to see it. And when people say, how did you not know? I ask them all the time. I point this out. Have you ever helped somebody move before? Did you go through all their stuff when you were helping them move? Then how do you know you weren't being used to smuggle narcotics then?
Yeah.
And people go, 'cause I know. And there's some people who are like, I just know. I just know everything.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's go play the lottery since you know everything. People love to think they know everything. I ask them, I go, well, when a magician taps you on the shoulder and you look and you're not there, or, you know, they're saying, look at this hand while they're jacking your watch and your wallet with the other. You know, a murderer will tell everyone he's a thief if it keeps their attention off of him being a murderer.
Sure.
It's just misdirection. Drug smugglers are shameless and they're smart. And if they can get their product across by keeping you in the dark, they will absolutely do that because they figure you won't draw suspicion to yourself, but also they don't have to pay you what you're really worth.
Sure.
And
because you don't know the risk.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it happens all the time. When I got out of the cab with the suitcases to leave Pakistan, the guy who was there was like, next time you come back, we'll show you around. We'll hook you up with some girls. You'll have a great time. And I'm humoring this guy. I'm like, yeah, sure. Next time I come back, I know for a fact I'm never coming back to Pakistan. Fucking country sucks. That fucking country sucks. And I'm good at finding like good things that are everywhere.
Yeah, you're super positive. So the fact that you're just 100% down on Pakistan.
Like, I know for a fact I'm never going to encourage Pakistan to anyone. This is before I get arrested.
Right, this is before your stint in prison.
I would encourage Turkey to everyone because I had a great time. I did not have a great time in Pakistan. I got robbed. I got sick. I hung out with rapists.
Yeah.
Wasn't really looking forward to going back to that country. There wasn't one positive note there, you know? Only positive note was I couldn't wait to get back to Missy.
Right, right.
I was counting the minutes. Like, I didn't even want to go to Turkey or to Sweden. I wanted to go direct home just so I can get to Missy. That was all that was on my mind, was just getting back to Missy. So it's early in the morning and I go into international departures and there's this long line curving around the corner and I go walking around. I'm waiting in line and the line goes all the way up this wall to where there's customs tables. And when the customs officer sees me and flags me, because I'm about 6 inches taller than everyone. So I'm like, fuck yeah. You know, I don't want to wait in this
skip
long line.
Skip the line. Yeah, yep. The benefits of being foreign, right?
Well, I were tall. I mean, so yeah. I go skip this long line. And I get to the front. And the guy says, business or pleasure? And like an asshole, I say, pleasure is my business.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm stupid. I'm a stupid 21-year-old who doesn't think before I talk. And they go through everything. Everything's fine. pack it up. I'm about to walk through the metal detector when someone grabs my arm. I look back and he goes, "You carrying narcotics?" And I said, "Check it again." Grabs the suitcase, not my bag, not my stuff. Grabs the suitcase, throws everything on the fucking floor, and I'm pissed. I'm like, "Hey, asshole."
Yeah. What the hell?
Like, that's fucking rude. You know, that's what I'm thinking. Like, this guy's a rude dickhead. And he takes the suitcase off to, like, I don't know where the fuck he takes it. He takes the suitcase off and leaves me right there. People are like in line to go through the metal detector, and also the customs tables are over here. Now a guard's standing over me, and I'm folding up all the leather goods right in the middle of this floor. This is embarrassing shit, but I'm there for the leather goods. That's all I care about.
So worst case, you just carry a bunch of them.
No, so I'm making them nice. I'm cleaning them off because I don't want, you know, I'm folding everything up. And I get brought to another room by this man, by the guard that was left with me. Now the guard's over there sitting with me, and time's starting to go by. It's taking a while. And I tell him, I go, "I don't know what's taking so long, but I'm going to need another suitcase. Destroy the suitcase." I even tell him, "Destroy the suitcase. I don't give a fuck. Just give me something else." The guard keeps like asking me to do this though, because he likes that I can bounce my chest.
Oh, like, yeah? Flex your pec muscles.
Yeah,
like, that's a little homoerotic somehow.
No, they're weird like that. Like, they're really like, "Hey, do, you know, do your titty bumps thing." You know, they're like, and I humored him. I did it. You know.
Yeah, well, you're 21.
I don't care. 20. I'm like, whatever. Da 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 da. And I was a lot bigger and just ready. But time's going by, and I'm worried about is missing my fucking flight.
Yeah,
I don't care about the suitcase. I just don't want to miss my flight. Now outside in the hallway, I start to see more guards like congregate and hang out there. Finally, the guy who asked me if there was narcotics in my suitcase comes in, and he's wearing a suit, but he's followed by guards wearing a guard uniform. And the guard is holding these two flat, like sandwich sealed things. And his exact words to me is, "What is this?" And I said, he's holding it. You know, like, right. That guy should know exactly what it is, because he's the one holding it. Like, I don't fucking know what it is.
Yeah, sure.
He says, "This is opium."
Opium.
But he said opium.
Opium.
I said, "Why are you showing me this?" He says, "It came out of your suitcase."
What are you thinking right at that point?
Felt like such a fucking idiot.
So you knew that came out of your suit. You didn't think they were framing you or anything. You were just like, this was in there.
No. I knew. I knew that everything I'd been told was too good to be true. I knew my friends set me up. I knew that I got fucked, and I was so sad mostly that I was really, like, I wasn't even mad. I was just sad. And my heart just dropped. And I said something that you never want to say when you're on vacation. I said, "I need to speak with the American embassy."
Yeah.
And the only reason I even knew how to say that was because I watched the movie Broke Down Palace like the year before, you know, like Claire Danes saying, "I need to speak to the American embassy." I was like, if I'd never seen that movie, I would have been like, "What the fuck do I do?" Probably would have been like, "I need to call my mom," you know? And guy says, "American embassy can't help you. We're going to hang you after 5 o'clock prayer." Like, just matter of fact, as soon as he said that, now I'm scared and I'm freaking. And they saw that I started to panic and everything, and they tried to grab at me, and I was chucking guys around, and I hurt a lot of guys. They said that I tried to escape that day, and I wasn't trying to escape. I mean, if I knew then what I knew now, fuck yeah, I would have escaped. If I knew then what I knew now, I never would have gone on a fucking trip. I would have just smashed Ray when he picked me up to go to the airport. I'm like, "Hey, Ray, we're going to take a detour out in the middle of the desert, and I'm going to make him dig his own fucking grave and bury himself." But they said I tried to escape that day, and I was only trying to find a phone because I wanted to warn other people, because a lot of other people were making these trips. That's all I wanted to do. I figure if I'm going to die, make your life worth something and warn others. That's what I was thinking. So I found a phone. I barricaded myself in an office down the hallway. They're banging on the door. There was no windows. It was a windowless office. And, you know, they're like, "Come out, you're surrounded," and they couldn't come in. I was in there for, I think, 40 minutes or so. Long time, it felt like. I couldn't get out. The numbers, none of the country codes worked.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I hear a knock on the door and says, is it Eric Odd? Because some people don't know how to say the accent on my name.
Sure.
And they said, "You want to speak to an American?" I said, "Are you from the embassy?" He says, "DEA." I said, "Prove it." He says, "Ask me a question." I go, "What state are you from?" He says, "Texas." And I'm thinking, everyone's said knows Texas. I said, "Who's your favorite football team?" He says, "Cowboys." I'm like, "Dallas, they suck." And I said, "They said that." He goes, "You want to talk to us?" I said, "They said that they're going to hang me." And so someone talks out there, and then he comes back, and he, like, under his breath, like, sort of like, ugh, they were kidding. How do you fucking kid about
that? Yeah, they're just a bunch of assholes.
No, how do you kid about that? I don't get it. You know, like, it's just, why would you do that? I mean, it's already a bad situation. Why would you go out of your way to do that? Imagine the cops doing that to people here. Hey, you know, well, okay, we're going to, you know, we arrest you for jaywalking. Hey, you're going to jail for the rest of your life. And we're going to put you on death row for this. Whoa, what the fuck?
This
shit escalated quickly. This morning, I'm thinking about getting back to Missy.
Sure.
And I'm so happy. And next thing I know, I'm being told that I'm going to be hung, you know, within the span of 40 minutes. You know, what the fuck? So he says, you can talk to us or, you know, it's up to you. And I said, yes, I want to talk to you. I 100% want to talk to the DEA. And he tells me, don't run. I'm like, where the fuck am I going to go? The whole room is full of guards. Now, all the guards are like grabbing onto my arms and like people are like literally like touching me like that to feel like they're helping escort me over. But before we take me to another room, they put me in front of the table that now has just one suitcase, the suitcase that I was hired to bring, but also all my stuff thrown into that suitcase, like from my own bag. I had my own portable DVD player, my wallet, my cell phone, all my clothes to make it look like that's my bag now. So they combined the two luggages into one.
Oh, right. So they made it look like you just packed it.
Yeah. And now they're taking photos and all the guards are behind me taking these photos. But now that the DEA is here, I'm thinking, all right, cool. There's friendly faces here. These guys, when they hear my story, contact my mom and everyone else, they're going to know that I'm innocent. So now I'm not worried anymore. So now like an asshole, I'm taking photos with these guys. I'm like, well, shit, live it up, Eric. Let's smile. So I'm smiling.
Yeah. There's a photo of you kind of like, what's up, everybody?
Yeah, because I thought that the DEA was going to hook me up, you know, because they were going to see that I'm innocent. I truly thought those guys were going to be there to help me now because I wasn't guilty. So this shit doesn't happen to innocent people, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. If I was scared, and then I'd be sadder in the photos. But I'm happy. Hey, these guys are here. All right. And you know, so I was posing for these photos. So there's photos of me, like, with my arms around the guards and being a dick. And I get brought to this office across the airport. Now all the guards are outside and the only ones in that office are three DEA agents and whoever office I'm assuming it is just a quiet Pakistani man behind the desk just doing his own thing, but he's also there just observing. And the DEA agents just start bombarding me with questions. One guy will ask me a question and I'll be halfway through an answer. Then another guy will cut me off in mid-sentence and bombard me with another question. And it's like they're trying to twist my words around and they're trying to capture me. And I'm telling them the story. I'm trying to tell them, you know, Ray Gazarian and the gym and everything. And this guy goes, how much were you getting paid for this? $800. $800? Like, they were like, what? Like, why would you risk your life for $800? I mean, it's a free trip for me. I would have done this for free. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. I would have done this for free. One guy goes, are you a user? Are you a junkie? I was like, I'm a gym rat, man. I'm like, how these motherfuckers you'll ever meet? And the guy goes, and this other guy goes, come on, everyone smokes pot. I'm like, no, that's just you. And then, when I tell him where I was going, because like my flight was going back to U of A, to Heathrow, to Sweden, the guy's like, why not just direct routes? I'm like, I don't know. I'm assuming that's the shortest route. And back then, I knew this common sense stuff. Today, when you go to like the cheapest flights aren't direct, they're, you go 22-hour layovers in Shanghai.
Yeah, sure.
I found $350 round trip tickets to New Delhi. And I had to stay in Shanghai for 22 hours coming back. It was the worst layover ever.
Oh, man.
But it makes sense. Like, so when I told this guy I was going to U of A, to Heathrow, to Sweden, he goes, these are all drug smuggling routes. And he starts naming off all these countries. I'm like, why don't you name the only two countries that aren't on the drug smuggling route? And so these guys are calling me a smart ass, thinking I'm a tough guy. And I'm like, I'm scared, okay? I'm not trying to be a tough guy, but you guys aren't, you're twisting my words around. Yeah. You don't believe a fucking word out of my mouth. And then it becomes completely evident that these guys are fucking with me, because this one guy, he does basically what the Pakistani guys did. I'm already scared. And he tells me, if these guys don't give you death, they're going to give you 20, 25 years in prison. And then when you're done there, you're going to go back to America and get another 10 to 15. I was like, whoa, now I know you're fucking with me, because I saw a little movie called Double Jeopardy with Ashley Judd.
Yeah, yeah.
So why would you guys do that? So obviously they're just fucking with me.
Yeah.
So that made me know that these guys don't believe a word out of my mouth. And I tell them, okay, so I'm fucked, right? You guys don't believe a word out of my mouth, but give me the benefit of the doubt. Other people are making these trips. You got to warn them, all right? You can't do anything for me, that's fine, but other people are making these trips. And this guy to my right says, oh, we're going to go over all the information you gave us. But if, you know, now's your chance. If you want us to help you, now's your chance. Once we walk out that door, you're on your own. It was obvious these guys weren't going to help me. Mm-hmm. And this one dude puts his hand in my heart and he says to me, he goes, He goes, why is your heart going so fast? Because you're lying to us. I'm like, I'm not lying to you guys. I'm scared. I was told I was going to be hung. You guys are telling me bullshit. You guys aren't here to help me. Guy calls me a punk. Says, you're just a punk. You're not, you're tough. You think you're a tough guy? This country's going to show you how weak you really are. And then when they leave, they say he's all yours. And I get nailed with a rifle. And I get, you know, that shit stung. And I get taken out of the damn room. And then I got driven to this customs lockup, not too far from the airport. And they just throw me in a cell that's got all these other dudes in it. And the first thing someone asked me is, you know, it says something I don't fucking understand. He goes, and someone says in English, he goes, country, what country? And I said, America. Wrong answer.
Yeah.
Wrong fucking answer. I'm already getting water thrown at me and spit on. So I'm smashing these old guys in this small cell. Like, these guys are ballsy, you know? Like, oh, okay, someone came in here that we can all, I mean, they're all mad, I get it. But now we can all take our anger out on someone. I'm that guy they think they can take their anger out on. I'm not in the fucking mood to be fucked with.
Yeah.
At all. I mean, I watch the show Oz. I watch, you know, all these prison movies and whatnot. And plus, no, I'm not the guy to be fucked with. That's yeah. not an option for me. So the guards see that I'm jacking up all these old guys in the cell and just like launching them around. They move me to another cell pretty quickly. They can't keep me in that room. And the other cell's got two old dudes in there. And these guys don't want to, you know, these guys are just miserable old men. They don't want any trouble. And I wait in that cell for the majority part of the day. An embassy consular comes over, a girl named Christy, and she's followed by this Pakistani interpreter who works for the embassy, a guy named Afzal. And she sees me and she gets directed to me. And my exact words to her, well, shit, if I'd known I was going to see someone as pretty as you, I would have gotten arrested a long time ago.
Oh, man, you just can't turn it off.
Nah, I can't. I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, people are going to know that I'm here. They're going to know the true story. They're going to know I'm innocent. I'm going to be gone here max a day, 2 days. That's what's going to happen. I'm going to get bailed out. I'm going to go out. That's what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking this isn't just enjoy it.
Sure.
I'm like, well, shit, this situation sucks. It's going to be a great story to tell one day. So she's laughing. Her exact words are, yep, he's from California. And she asked me, how are you doing? I said, great, never better. She goes, really? I go, no, what's happening?
Yeah.
And she tells me that, well, we're going to try to come back and see you on Tuesday. And this is Friday. I'm like, Tuesday? The fuck? Why are you going to wait till Tuesday? And I tell her the whole, she says, you don't have to talk to us. I said, yes, I want to talk to you. They're like, you need to sign something so that we can tell other people. If there's people you want us to contact, tell them to contact my mother. Also, tell them to call the gym. And because the other people were making these fucking trips, you got to warn them. And then when she tells me we'll come back, we'll try to come back Tuesday, she tells me what's going to happen, that I'm going to be presented in front of the magistrate in the morning. They're going to decide how many days of physical remand they put me under. And I ask her, what's physical remand? She says, well, in Pakistan, they figure you're not going to tell them the truth. They can beat it out of you.
So physical remand is like they just torture you until you talk?
Physical remand is open torture. Physical remand is straight up torture, you know?
Yeah. Shit.
So this is the embassy telling me this. I'm like, aren't you guys supposed to do something? And they said, we're only supposed to make sure you're not treated any differently than the people around you. But the people around me are all being beaten too. There's yeah. dudes having the bottom of their feet beaten all afternoon and all night. It's not really, they lowered the fucking bar when it went to, I can't be treated any differently than anyone else.
Sure.
Big time. So I'm thinking I'm only see this girl next Tuesday. She came back within another, like an hour or two. The reason she came back is because exactly what I told her, my mom told her over the phone. And so she brought me a soda and they brought me a piece of pizza, like a small weird box of pizza. So they brought me food back. She let me know that my mom's trying to get a lawyer and everything else. But like her whole attitude changed when she came back, because everything I told her was exactly what my mother had told her. So she went from like, this sucks to be you, to holy wow, this really sucks to be you. Mm-hmm. Like you could tell there was a level of like possible. She believed what I was saying. That night a lawyer came, but I never saw him again. What was going on was all these lawyers were coming in, and then they saw, oh, American. So they started jacking up the rates. Now, this is a $400 case for anyone else. All right. In Pakistan, a drug smuggling case is $400 max. People that were trying to get, like, they were thinking hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, not rupees, dollars.
Dollars, right. This is their ticket to retire.
This is their ticket. This is their one chance to, like, retire and make it big. And no one sees a body, a human being there. They see someone's bones. They can, like, get rich off of.
Yeah.
So I'm not getting any opportunities. when I get presented in front of the courts and I'm led in these like archaic chains or like one side of this, this is the stuff that you would see in like medieval movies and everything. Sure. And the guards would all hold the chains long. And if I really wanted to, I could be swinging these fuckers around, but I'm thinking I'm going through the legal system here, you know, and I don't know where to go. I don't know. If I knew then, like I said, I would have gotten a car and driven towards the Indian border. That's exactly what I would have done.
Sure.
But I'm going with the system, trying to figure it out as it goes. No one's telling me anything. At the courts, it's bazaars and bazaars. Imagine like a swap meet with just a bunch of hanging over blankets for shade and everything, and dust and trees and homeless beggars everywhere. And everyone is like pushing up on each other. And they're bringing me to the lower court magistrate, which is, it's like a rusty shack that has a bunch of papers piled on top of it. And the court is above your head. So you're like, your chin goes to the, like, I'm the only one whose chin goes above the desk. Everyone else is below the desk. So the judge is like looking down on you. This was really weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand anything because no one's speaking in English. Whatever was said that day in Urdu, Christy understood. She was there with Afzal again, the interpreter. And the judge wrote off, and the guy who was leading me with the guards, they agreed on something and they were about to turn away. Well, Christy came up to the desk and started speaking in Urdu to the judge, something that I found out later she was not supposed to do at all, because the embassy's, American embassy's strict policy is if it's narcotics related, they don't get involved whatsoever. They leave you completely hanging. Well, whatever Christy said, the judge agreed with her, brought it back, and they changed it. And the dude who was in charge of it was pissed, like fucking pissed. And I asked her as we were walking back through the bazaars, because we had to walk and talk while I was getting rushed to the vans. I said, what happened? She goes, they wanted 10 days of physical remand. I got you 3. And my first words to her were, I could have lasted 10.
Oh, man.
Because I'm a fucking moron, right? Like, trust me, but I'm scared. And that's how I handled it when I was scared. She says, you're welcome.
Yeah.
And I to this day, I can't thank that woman enough, because, for the next 3 days, I'd be tortured for information I didn't have, and I'd be electrocuted. I'd be hung up like a punching bag, used as one. I'd have the bottom of my feet beaten. I was drowned. I was
like waterboarded, kind of deal.
Yeah, but I was in a dunk tank drowning.
Yeah,
like waterboarders, they put the cloth over your face and drown it and whatnot.
This is your head dunked in the
water.
This
is my whole head submerged under the water, and I just hold my breath and try not to panic, because if you panic, water will come in your nose, water will go in your lungs. So you have to not panic. And they would ask me the same questions, and I would try to delay the answers. I try to tell them the same thing, but they don't believe you, and they just want you to admit the drugs are yours. But when you have no right answers for them, it's not going to stop. The pain's not going to stop. They're not going to, I mean, it's painful, but it was more demoralizing emotionally, because it was just, people do this to other people. And, it's so fucked up. It really is. People die during physical remand all the time. And I would read it in the newspapers in jail that so-and-so died, another person died. And it's just the way things are. People can't handle it. I mean, I could handle it, but it was just, in a sense, I guess it's the closest thing to a rape or an assault, I guess, because it's just so dehumanizing and so embarrassing. And, you know, it takes something from you. Like, it really does. And I wish I could just forget it ever happened. I really do. All I could do is just take it. All I can do is take it, because nothing I said was going to make him stop.
Yeah. You have in the documentary, which we'll link in the show notes, this is reenacted. This whole scene is reenacted, and you didn't play it yourself.
I did the show Locked Up Abroad. The whole point of telling this documentary, because some people are like, well, if I've already seen Locked Up Abroad, why do I want to see this documentary?
This is much more important.
And I tell them, because Locked Up Abroad only took the exciting stuff. They left the guts and the heart and everything out. They didn't explain how I was the way I was. They didn't explain how I was able to adjust to situations. They just showed the fights, the tortures, and the harshness of it. And that left me hanging. And since I did Locked Up Abroad for 6 years now, all I do, whenever they air the show Locked Up Abroad, I get countless emails and messages from people hating on me, telling me to kill myself, that I'm a fucking liar, that that they would kill me and fuck me up, and that I got raped every day, and they just want to say some harsh, mean stuff to me. And The only reason I told the show Locked Up Abroad, like, I didn't want to do the show. I never wanted to do the show. They asked me every season to come do the show, and it was finally season six that I agreed to do it. And it was because they said, what if we let you play yourself? And I'm an actor. I'm a stuntman. And I wanted it told right. But I also thought, had I seen a show like this back in the day, then I would have been armed with the information that this shit really happens. Mm-hmm. And I would have seen it for what it really was. And I would have been smart enough to walk away. So I told it because the only way I'm able to sort of justify or find meaning to what happened to me is to hopefully prevent it from happening to somebody else. If I was built and meant to do anything, maybe this is it. Maybe. So I told the story. And then what they did, though, was leave me completely hanging. And I've been dealing with it ever since. You know, I've got feelings. I've got, sure. I try to ignore it. I've got thick fucking skin. But man, there are some mean people out there. And for 6 years, I've just been getting nonstop hate mail because of Locked Up Abroad. It's an apples and oranges. I get positive messages, but I get just as many negative messages. And the negative messages seem to ring a lot louder than the positive
sure,
messages.
Yeah.
So my friend Jamie, who says, we need to tell your story because what's happening to you is wrong. And it is a good story. It's a powerful story. And when she told me, we'll tell it in your words and we'll make it, you know, long enough so everyone can understand it, we'll answer the questions Locked Up Abroad never answered. And the responses have actually been really positive. I've had people who told me they were suicidal and, you know, were about to kill themselves. And somehow they came across that documentary. And they've since realized that if I can go through everything I've been through and somehow still have a positive attitude, still somehow have a reason to want to live, then they themselves can find a reason to want to live. And I've had people say, look, this does sound like a lot, like something my friend's doing or something I was offered. And I was able to see it for what it really was. So I thank you for you going through it so that I don't have to, or that my friend doesn't have to. The messages have been a lot more positive because of my documentary. And that lets me know that it wasn't for nothing, because my life, I try to be positive. Every day I tell myself I'm happy. Every day I lie to myself and say I'm happy and I want to live I got all kinds of good things. And there are reasons for that. But I can't shake my past either. I've been through so much fucking shit. And when people love to kick you when you're down and make fun of your situation, knowing that people out there are finding strength from it lets me know that it wasn't for nothing. So, sorry.
No, it's okay, man. The story is truly amazing, and the documentary is truly amazing. That's why I wanted to do this show. That's why I flew down here to talk to you, because, like I said in the beginning of this, what you went through is so incredibly harrowing and horrible, and it makes everyone who sees it want to be more like you. And I'm not saying that to blow sunshine up your skirt. It's really, the truth is, nobody comes out of this, or I should say very few people come out of this becoming somehow a better person, and you've done that. And that's what's really inspiring about this. There's a lot in this documentary that's incredible, but the best part of it is the fact that you came out and you're not just this reclusive, angry guy who hates everyone. That's the most important thing. And I think that there's so much that people can take away from it. Not just don't carry bags for your friends across the border, but the way that when I'm having a bad day, I don't think, well, I definitely don't see things the way that you do. And I think that's what's really inspiring about it. I think inspiration generally is something that you can get. It can be cheap, right? You can get it from anywhere. But somebody who's really done the work, you worked on yourself a lot when you were in prison in Pakistan, whether you realize it at the time or not. And that part's really amazing. And frankly, the fact that you still have your sense of humor about it is amazing as well.
All I did was make fun of myself every day. Even there, I made fun of myself every day. I'm in a bad situation. I remember the last day and being tortured, and the guards are like, is there anything you want to say? I was like, let's talk, more rock. Let's fucking do this, you know?
Yeah.
I just wanted to get it over with, and, that last day, they just wanted me to admit the drugs are mine.
The last day of physical.
Last day of physical remand. His only question is just say you're guilty. This will stop. And like the two guards that were there, they like felt like, I don't know. I kind of got that they felt bad. Like they weren't vindictive. They were just, this is their job.
What do you think about somebody's job it is to torture people?
I think that they, you know, I mean, unless you're just a psychopath, I think that, you know, sucks.
It sucks.
Yeah. If your job is to watch people suffer, I mean, that can't be fun.
No.
that's got to be draining on them too and everything, sure. You know, and like, wow, man, like this is my job. Like, I guarantee those guys want to get out of that position as soon as possible. I wouldn't want to do that job.
One of the things that I found amazing was how you got through the torture in the first place. First of all, you have that high pain tolerance because of probably what happened to you as a kid. But when I saw them dunking your head in the water, and you said you learned how to hold your breath. Tell, how come you can hold your breath for so long? This part was so ridiculous.
I can't hold my breath that long anymore, but I mean, I can hold my breath like 90 seconds now. But, when I was a kid, the show, the Fear Factor had come out.
Yeah, sure.
And I watched the show Fear Factor and I was like, this is a cool show. I want to get on the show. And I remember the episode I watched, this guy, whoever held their breath the longest was going to win $50,000. And everyone gets in the tank and is holding their breath, but like, no, like, then there's, it was funny because there was this fat bartender who's smoking a cigarette before he's about to go in the tank.
Unbelievable.
And he's just out of shape, dude. He's smoking a cigarette. He's literally putting the cigarette down before it's his turn to go in the tank for $50,000, right? And this dude held his breath a minute and 13 seconds. And I'm like, what, man? This out of shape smoking jerk is going to win 50K. So I always saw these auditions for Fear Factor. Yeah. You know, I absolutely planned on getting on that show, but I wanted to be ready for like, oh God, man,
I'm going to crush this.
If there's a breath holding competition, I'm going to smoke it. Right. So I started learning to hold my breath. I would hold my breath whenever possible at the street. I always did it at stoplights. I'd do it, before I got to certain points in the freeway, you know, like I hold my breath to that sign way down there. And, before I went to bed at night and in the shower, I would hold my breath all the time, and I got it to where I can hold my breath almost 3 minutes.
That's incredible.
It's fucking crazy. But I started doing that like the November or October before that happened. Just a couple of months before that. And I'm thinking to myself, these guys are going to hold me under this water. I'm wanting to laugh because it's like, what are the odds? It's literally like Slumdog Millionaire. They were just asking me the questions I just happened to know. They were just happening to do the things I just happened to know. These guys are beating me. Well, my mom beat me with a belt all the time. You know, I got, you know, they're beating the bottom of my feet. That shit stings, but it's honestly not more pain than I've ever experienced. I've experienced pain my entire fucking life. They were electrocuting me. My friends and I used to taser each other for fun on the football field. And now they're drowning me. And here I was learning. I had learned to hold my breath literally up until this point.
Were these guys frustrated with you, or were you like, okay, it hurts, stop, and then they're like, all right, fine?
No, they were pissed off at me. They were not happy. They thought it was going to be easy.
Yeah, and here they are working for their money.
They were laughing when they first started and work, and now here we are. The whole day goes by. They didn't get anything they could use. The second day goes by, they didn't get anything they used. The third day, they just wanted a confession.
Sure.
Like maybe they were going for a record, which was that we always get our confession. I don't know. But they didn't get anything out of me.
They're about to lose a bet. Yeah.
The third day, they just wanted me to admit the drugs are mine, and I admitted nothing.
Yeah.
All right, I know this is kind of crazy, but we're just getting warmed up. And in part two, we'll be picking up where we left off and where the real harrowing story actually begins. So this Eric Ade situation, I'm telling you, we're just at the beginning here. If you want to know how I managed to book all these great people and manage my relationships using systems and tiny habits, check out our Level 1 course, which is free, over at jordanharbinger.com/level1. Don't say you'll do it later. Don't say you're waiting for the perfect time. The number one mistake I see is people postponing this and not digging the well before they get thirsty. It's 5 minutes a day. Quit your crying. They're designed to just be really quick, and it's the stuff I wish I knew 10, 15 years ago. This is not fluff. It is crucial, especially if you're in business, and even if you aren't. You can find all that at jordanharbinger.com/level1. Speaking of building relationships, tell me your number one takeaway here from Eric Ade. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram. This show is produced in association with Podcast One, and this episode was co-produced by Jason Royal Flush DeFilippo and Jen Harbinger. Show notes are by Robert Fogarty, worksheets by Caleb Bacon, and I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful, which should be in every episode. So please share the show with those you love and even those you don't. Lots more in the pipeline. Stay tuned for Eric Ade Part 2 coming soon. And in the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time.